Everybody, this week we are talking about a little video game called Little Nightmares. You get it? Little game, little... Okay. Anyway, this game has a lot of dark topics and themes, so for the first time in a while, I actually do have to do a little trigger warning in the beginning. We do discuss a little bit, like a light cannibalism, and we do talk about suicide at one point. It's very quick, doesn't overshadow the conversation, but you know... In case this is a thing for you, just be prepared. I think it's a really, really great discussion, mostly because it was just me talking for an hour, and I love that for myself. Other than that, please enjoy this little discussion about the game. It's really dark, it's really cute, and I think you're gonna have fun listening to this.
Okay, I always like to enter with something weird. Okay, but I don't have anything quippy today. But instead, I read... Do you want to hear about some Wikipedia drama?
Yeah.
Apparently... Okay, so Wikipedia has this whole hierarchy of, like, people who make edits to it. You know, someone who just makes contributions is, I guess, called, like, an editor. But then sometimes someone can ascend to a higher rank... of, like, being an administrator. And there was this one account that became administrator, and the person behind the account kept hitting that they were a moderately famous indie musician from Spain.
Okay.
But then they were, like, doing stuff like editing a lot of articles on cricket players. And finally, people figured out that this person is not the moderately famous indie musician from Spain, but is in fact a person in India who just pretended to be the indie singer for years.
Whoa. I thought you were going to say who was a cricket player, hence why.
No. But there's a lot of drama. Apparently they had gotten banned from Wikipedia before for trying to scam it and stuff. There's this great Twitter account called Depths of Wikipedia.
Okay.
Which, if you ever want, like, the latest and greatest of, like, weird stuff that has to do with Wikipedia, gotta go check that Twitter account out. And so with that, welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val. And I learned something new today.
Yeah, you learned that Wikipedia drama is a thing that exists. So today, Val's gonna take... Tell us an audio essay. Why did I phrase that in the weirdest way possible? Val is going to talk to us about Little Nightmares, which I know very... It's a puzzle video game. That's all I know.
When I said audio essay, that is so generous, and I appreciate you using that terminology to say what this is going to be. Overall, this is going to be a mess, but...
It was made... Okay, I should mention it was made by... Tarsier Studios. The first one was released in 2018, and there's been several sequels since. Are we talking about all of them?
So there's only been two games and a few DLCs for the first one.
Oh, okay.
The third one, the trailer just got released, like, very, very, very recently. I didn't even know it existed until today when I was doing, like, a very quick brush up on the whole thing.
On the deep lore. Got it.
Yeah, I did 15 minutes of research. Well, in reality, I really love this game. It's fairly quick. It's a very short story. I think maybe 5 hours. But that might just be even still very generous. It's a very, very quick game. And you play as a little girl whose name is Six. And we don't know the significance of that name. And we don't know where she's from. But we are this child. And we follow her on her little journey through this very creepy vessel called the Maw. It kind of looks like a Bowser shell. It's both...
That's a very evocative image.
Let me see if actually... Let me just Google it real quick so I can show you.
Oh, that does look like Bowser. Yeah, it's like... That is some Bowser's castle mix of Bowser shell, like a Koopa shell.
Yeah.
But apparently it goes deep underwater. It's like a...
Which we never see in the game. This is just like the concept art that shows it.
Okay.
But in the game, we just see that little like shell.
Yeah.
Well, it's a big shell. And I don't think we ever see it from a distance. We just see it from the couple of parts where we are on the outside of it. And that's pretty much the whole game. We're this child and we're trying to escape this maw.
Is there like an actual plot to it? Because I played the first little bit and I thought it was just like a sequence of like scenes. But is there like an actual plot to it?
So there is and there isn't.
Okay.
The plot is that the main person on this vessel is this woman.
Does this person have a name?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't think anyone really has a name.
Except Six.
Except Six.
Who's a number.
Yeah, exactly. But basically, there's this woman. She seems to be in charge. She seems to have some sort of magic.
Okay.
And she doesn't really follow Six, but she appears in some of her visions. Like, we start the game with Six waking up from a dream with her, with that woman.
Okay.
And in the end, we fight against her because she's the person who is, like, in charge of this whole place and she's standing in our way of escape.
The Little Nightmares fandom wiki says that she is called the Lady.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, no name, but she looks hot.
I mean, she is literally a robe and a mask with some hair, but sure. That's Belle's type.
She has that feminine look to her. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
No one judge me. You're all gay.
I'm totally judging. Because why are we talking about this? Is it gay? Is there something gay related to it?
The only thing that's gay about it is that I really like it.
Okay.
And I just figured, why not talk about it? It's fair fun. Enough. It has... I think you can read a lot of themes into it. So there's a little more to the game. As you progress, your character, Six, she is a very, very young child, and she's alone. And as you move through the levels, you kind of get hungry from time to time. And there are, I think, two or three scenes where you eat food, only to find out that a lot of the meat on this maw is human meat, right? So it's a little bit trigger warning-y. It's never too explicit for most of the game. But then the final time that you eat in the game, you actually eat a little gnome. And I think a lot of this game has to do with corruption, has to do with becoming what you fear, has to do with loss of innocence, the parallels between you, like, as a child and adulthood. You can read so much into this. Also, a lot of it is inspired by Japanese culture. Like, if you look at the image of the lady, she seems to be wearing some sort of traditional robe.
Yeah, she's wearing a kimono and something called a no mask.
Yeah, and a lot of the architecture in the second half of the game resembles a lot of Japanese architecture.
Okay.
And this has more to do with the second game, but it's still there in the first one. But just commentary on society, on capitalism, on, you know, tradition being instilled in the old ways sort of thing.
Okay, say more about, like, what does that mean?
I think ultimately it's just a fun puzzle game. But if we wanted to, we can make a whole thing about how children grow up in these terrifying societies and they become a part of it. So at the end of the game, we fight the lady and, you know, naturally we defeat the bad guy, right? But we defeat her by weakening her and then just like biting her neck and then she dies and we take her powers into ourselves. It's like we become the thing that we were escaping, right? And really weirdly, the lady either at moments resembles Six, at least with her behavior, and also in the environmentals of the game, like the backgrounds, things like that. There are from time to time portraits where the lady might have looked like Six at some point in her life. So okay. It's never clear. It's never confirmed. It's just there to be eerie and uncanny, right?
Yeah.
But we can read into it that, in a way, Six becomes the next lady, which, to me, I always thought that she was the sixth one, maybe. But there's no like continuity in the game, really. It's very isolated, even from the second game, which, ironically, Little Nightmares 2 is a prequel, which might be spoilers. By the way, all of this is spoilers, all of it. if y'all haven't noticed, and I'll do a little disclaimer in the beginning anyway.
Yes.
But the second game...
Why is that ironic? I'm gonna call you out on that use of the word ironic.
Well, because a lot of this game is circular.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it starts... it ends with us sort of in a very similar place as where we started, because we are alone moving forward into this scary world. Yeah. But now we see that we've killed the thing that we most feared. So a lot of it is, like, circular. In the second game specifically, you don't know that it's a prequel until, I think, the very end.
Oh, interesting. So it hides that fact from you.
It doesn't hide it. It obscures it. Because...
Okay, what's a synonym for hide?
I think it wants you to know is the thing. Like, it doesn't... Yeah, that's a weird way to phrase it for me. But what I mean to say is, like, you as a player who's played the first game, you're not sure. But then after you finish it, it almost like they wanted you to be like, yes, this is the prequel. At least in my experience. But we're not talking about that game. We can do like a different thing. Maybe you'll like this little audio essay and decide to play it. Who knows?
I mean, I did buy it on your recommendation. I started playing it. I don't know. I feel like I have to be in a very specific mood
I was going to say, you have to be like in a mood.
Yeah.
Also, there are a couple of levels that I feel like would be very frustrating. They didn't bother me, but I know that if I played them like 5 years ago, when I was a little less chill than I am now, I probably would have not liked this game anymore. But I mean, just to step out of this abstract plot for a moment, it's a beautiful game. It's if you look at just the thumbnails for the game, it's very, like, it's colors that should look warm but are cold, but they still look very cozy. I don't know how else to describe it, but that's the best way. Also, you're a very adorable little girl in a yellow raincoat, and she's barefoot, so when you play, you can hear her little, like, feet plop against the ground, and different surfaces make different sounds, which is literally my favorite thing about this game. I just really liked how it's very silent, and then you just hear the plop-plop. Super atmospheric, really fun. A lot of the moments, all of it is told through the environment. Very, very, very early in the game.
Yeah, is there any dialogue?
No.
Okay.
Early in the game, you actually walk past an area where you see feet hanging and like a chair. So it's a super dark game.
I remember that. I do remember that. I'm pretty sure.
And it's very startling because it's the first thing you encounter. You wake up in like this dark, empty place. It looks like you're on the ship. There are these little gnomes around, but they look very friendly, even though they look frightened.
Yeah.
And then once you get out of that area, the first thing you see is that. And for me personally, I was like, oh, hold on, this game is going to be really, really dark. And in a sense, it is, because all of the themes are very adult. There are just rooms and rooms full of suitcases that are either ransacked or empty or just seemingly forgotten. I believe...
And what does that... Why is that dark? What does that mean?
Because at some point you also encounter rooms where there are just piles upon piles of shoes, which anytime I see a pile of shoes in movies, it just... Yeah. It's very evocative. It's very scary. So a lot of the ship just looks like something really bad happened there.
Okay.
And it doesn't quite look like a massacre, but it also does. Like, there's no blood, there's no real gore in this game. It's still kind of made through the point of view of a child, but as an adult playing it, you see all of it and you contextualize it. There's a lot of cages, there's a lot of, like, chains, hints at awful things happening, but it's also very strangely very PG. I was going to say PC. It's so politically correct.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions so far? Because in my head, everything is very clear, but I don't know how it sounds like to you who has not really played the full game.
I feel like you've touched on a lot of topics, and I want to explore them in more depth, because it's kind of all over the place in my head. It's a jumble. So let's start. Okay. Let me start with this question to just organize things a little bit.
And while you ask it, I shall sip a little of my tea.
Yeah, sip a little of your tea. And, okay, just run me through. Are the gnomes actual gnomes, or are they something that look, like, what do they look like?
They look like little mushroom people.
Okay.
There's no G in the beginning of the gnomes, so it's okay. It's a very, very silly.
And you mentioned that six is small, but what do you mean by that?
All of the adults in the game are proportionally giant to her.
Okay.
Like, even the lady, she's like a quarter of the lady's height.
So when you start the game, and I know the gameplay varies based on the level or whatnot, what would you say is the primary aspect of the puzzle solving? Like, is it focused on kind of like stealth? Is it focused on pattern matching or pattern recognition? How would you describe the puzzle gameplay?
A lot of it is just movement. It's not at the level of like a temple run game, but it is kind of similar. You just have to run in the right direction. The whole game, you're pretty much running away.
From what?
From many things. Sometimes it's, there are three or four bosses in this game.
Yeah.
There are also parts where you're chased by a horde of the people who are on the Maw as tourists, I'm assuming. But there's a lot of moments where just, like, creatures are chasing you. And a lot of it has to do with avoiding obstacles, running around places, finding
so
little...
So it's more of a platformer than a puzzler, then.
There are a couple of puzzles in there. But they're very minor. It's mostly kind of like a floor platformer.
Okay. I'm going to just keep barraging you with questions because you said a lot of different things.
I didn't realize that I had that many thoughts about this game, but I do, which is great.
So let's organize those thoughts. So, you know, I asked you if there was any queer themes in it, and you mentioned that there's no direct queerness, and then you brought up cannibalism. So I just want to understand why that was like the next thing that you jumped to.
I think in my head, first of all, there are, I think, only two women in this game.
Yeah.
I think it's six and the lady.
Okay.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, all the people on the boat are... have you watched Spirited Away?
Yes.
You know the scene where the parents start pigging out and they kind of turn into pigs?
Yeah.
A lot of the people on the Maw are very, very obese. And almost all of them are dressed in like business suit, sort of very wealthy looking, opulent clothing. But I don't think I've seen women. I think all of them are in the shape of men. And I'm saying shape of because we're not actually sure if they're human or not, or if they're wearing people's skin, which is also hinted at heavily. This is a dark game.
Yeah.
Let me first send you a little picture of a gnome.
Okay, so they look like Dobby from Harry Potter, except they've got a cone for a head.
Yeah, and they're very cute. They're very cute little mushroom guys.
How so? What makes it, I mean, like, it just looks pretty gross to me, so what makes them cute?
They're very, very tiny. The way they run is very silly, and every time they kind of support Six and rescue her a couple of times throughout the game.
Okay, but she eats one?
Near the end, when the hunger really starts to take over her.
And what does that represent to you, I guess?
So if
cannibalism.
First of all, I think they just wanted to explore a really, really dark theme. And cannibalism is also always like a thing that's not fun to watch, especially when children partake, right? Second of all, a gnome is the first humanoid creature that Six eats, the second being the lady.
Okay.
But right before the gnome, Six also eats a living rat because of how hungry she gets. And there's nothing else around. So basically, I think she goes from like a bowl of food that an imprisoned child pushes towards her.
Yeah.
Because she is visibly, it looks like she's almost dying. So she eats the food that this child gives, which we can assume is made out of people. Then she eats a sausage, I believe. Then she eats a rat. Then she eats a gnome. And then she eats the lady. So with each bite, it's like it becomes more and more tangible in terms of like eating something that's more and more similar to herself. And in the very end, she is the very thing she's kind of afraid of, because now she has the magic power, like that weird shadow hunger power of that lady and the thing that she's been running from the whole game. So it's both the journey is corrupting her and it's like a cycle. But there's also a lot of hints that the little gnomes are children as well, or were once children. And it gets confirmed in the DLC. In the DLC, we play as this like runaway boy who encounters the lady in the end, and then she turns him into a gnome.
Okay.
But that's the DLC.
Why does she turn people into gnomes? Do we know?
No. There's very, very few things in this game that are explained.
Okay. What's your theory?
Personally, I think that this is one of the things that's just there for the creepy factor.
Okay.
Because...
There is a lot of, you know, fairy tales and fables and whatnot about witches or evil people who transform children, so...
Yeah. And basically, I think also a lot of it has to do with if you're playing this game and everything in it is terrible, you're just not going to have a good time. Right. But throughout the whole game, you kind of have this little hope of, hey, these little fellas are helping you out. They're trying to keep you safe and they're really, really kind to you. And they're like just these, they're literally very bright in the game. They are, you know, this whitish, kind of dirty stained bedsheet color sort of creature. And so in a lot of dark scenes, it's very easy to see them darting around the area. So they are the bright spots of this game. So because of that, it is much more shocking when Six eats the little gnome, even though we know it's coming too, because we've been escalating and it's very consistently escalating. So it's both like that fear of the inevitable, but also I think it's in our human nature to want to be like, please don't do it this one time, right? And I think we wouldn't have that without the gnomes. And it's also just another way for the children to disappear other than children being killed.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it just serves the purpose of humanizing the story a little bit. And I think you made an excellent point. I didn't think about that. But yeah, I guess a lot of fairy tales have, which is transforming children into a thing that becomes helpful to the next victim. I think I'm going to get a little bit into the villains of this game. So in the first game specifically, the second game is a little bit different. They're a little more humanoid. In this one, I'm gonna actually just show you a picture.
So these villains are other adults on the Maw.
Well, if you click on that, I sent you an image
it's
of the
chef looking guy. Okay.
You can see how the skin is falling off, right?
Yeah.
It looks like a mask. I believe the, just the whole creature is very swollen and reminiscent of a corpse.
Yeah.
We have the same thing with the janitor. I'll send you that fella too. Creepy, creepy level. He's got very long hands. I mean, arms, not hands. This gentleman. If you take a look, it also looks like the skin is peeled off.
Yeah, you don't want this guy tickling you.
So the assumption there is that these are some sort of creatures that wear human skin. And a lot, it kind of accounts for the empty suitcases and all the shoes and where did the people go and the prevalence of meat on the Maw. So I think the whole time, the only actual humans we encounter are other children, and we only interact with them once. And that's when a child behind cages in this like cafeteria kind of scene where we're walking down this hall and on either side are barred up rooms. And you can see that there are kids sitting at long tables eating. And once again, all of this is just kind of shadows almost. And this is where Six starts to get very hungry. She collapses, I believe, and then one of the children pushes a bowl towards her.
Yeah.
If I remember, I played this like a couple of years ago, but it left an impression on me that I remember so much about it, except for the tiniest of details. And then, so this child feeds us, and then we kind of never interact with children again. But we do walk through a lot of places and rooms where it's very clear that they are keeping children. And then rooms later in the game where we can see that these children are being used as fuel, as food. So those are the only humans we encounter.
So let me ask you this. So the scene where she gets hungry in front of the children and they give her some food. Do you think she's hungry because she wants to eat the children? Is that kind of the like hidden message there?
I don't think so. It could be. But we've been getting little hints of it earlier. Okay. I think she's just finally in a room where she smells the food. And yeah, you can say that she smells the children as well. But mostly I think it's just that first descend into madness. It's that first like step that she takes. And it wasn't her that took that step, right? Because she's just trying to make it through this hallway. And someone else gives her this bowl of unidentified food. And I think it says a lot about just like, once again, this has more to do with the second game in context of the first game. But I think Six is very much shown as the victim of her circumstances, but also someone who develops full agency by the end of the first game and experiences it in moderation in the second game.
Okay, what does that mean? What does it mean to develop full agency?
So for in the beginning, I felt very isolated when I played.
Okay.
You legitimately feel alone, right?
Yeah.
Then you get moments that are happening and becoming more numerous where these little gnomes are helping you out. Then you meet these children. And then by that point, you're like almost surrounded by a very warped support system. And from then on, Six starts to be a little more cunning. She's always cunning, but there's a little bit more of that violence of like, I'm gonna defeat these villains and I don't care if they get hurt, which makes sense because they're monsters. But the more and more you progress in the game, the darker Six's actions start to seem. And I think it's becoming that way because at that point, she's choosing to commit these acts of violence versus running away from a situation she cannot get away from. Even though nothing really changes, she's still trapped on that ship, right? She's still a very young child. But just the way that the game itself is made, the way her body behaves, the way that her movement is in the game, it becomes way more insidious the longer you play. It's really cool. I don't know how they did it. I'll be honest with you. I think just from time to time, they do very little animations where she stares, either at the camera or somewhere else in a certain way. And we never see her face, actually. Let me kind of show it to you. So this is what she looks like the whole game. Click, click, click. Okay, so this is what she looks like as you play it. Her hood always obscures her face. You see the very tiniest portion of her chin, just to see that.
Yeah.
Like, we can see her feet and her hands and the bottom half of her face, so we know she's human.
Yeah.
But very similar to the lady, her face is obscured. And I think every single character we play as throughout the series overall is faceless. In Little Nightmares 2, we play as Mono, who is this young boy with a paper hat, paper bag on his head.
Yeah.
In the DLC, we're this little young boy with very shaggy hair that kind of blocks the face. So a lot of this is faceless.
Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of it is just... I honestly think that Six doesn't really have an identity. We don't know who she is, where she comes from, where she's going, what's going to happen after. We don't know anything about this world. We're only aware of what's happening on the vessel. We never go outside of the vessel. We're always on it. We don't know what's happening outside in the greater world. The same thing with just as she progresses in the story, we don't get to see her face, right? So despite us as players being her in the game, the longer I played, the more I distanced myself from her because I stopped trusting in her actions because it seemed less like she was trying to escape and just escape and more like she was enjoying some part of this journey. It's really, really interesting because of how subtle a lot of these decisions are within the game, but they just, it's all about the feeling they built in you. And
yeah.
While playing this game, I actually legitimately, like, started not fearing Six, but being very, very mistrusting of her and cautious and, like, still on her side the whole time, but in a way that's no longer built on this want to escape and more so of just wanting to kind of get away from her. It's really weird. She also really gives off the wet rat vibe.
Okay.
Just like very, I don't know, very secretive and evil.
Secretive and evil.
But also very naive. Also
kind of pitiful.
Very naive.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like at first, I feel like I assigned a sort of fear to her. Because I'm like, she must be scared. She's in a dark. There's a lot of like things that are trying to kill her. But then as the game progresses, I'm like, she's not afraid of any of this at all. Like, it almost feels like she doesn't care. And maybe she doesn't even want to escape at all. Maybe she wants to go and take that power, you know? Yeah. You're not sure. And I think that's the strength of this game. It doesn't give you context. You have to build it yourself.
Okay.
And I am a bajillion percent certain that a lot of the people who played this game were just like, oh, this was a fun little puzzle and a little creepy. And they never thought about it again. Because you can do that as well. Mm. It's just like one of those things where it gives you what you put into it. It's really hot in this room that I'm sitting in. I'm getting heated. Do you have a question for me so I can get a little sippy sip of my tea?
Yeah, so, okay. So I guess you were just talking about the fact that there's kind of this growing perception from you that Six is not afraid. Do you think in the end Six is like a villain almost? Or is there still something heroic about her character?
I absolutely believe that she is the villain at the end. But I still support a lot of her journey. And I think I'm still on her side at the end. But in a way that's like very, I would be afraid of her 1,000,000%. Like I'm just, it's just, it's a scary ending. It's a really powerful ending and it's really scary. And they do that without making the game just physically dark, which I love because a lot of horror games, they just make it so that you can't see anything and things jump out at you, right? This game is very, very lit. Like, not like cool lit, it's cool lit, but there's a lot of lights in this game. A lot of the rooms you go through are bright. And if not, there aren't, like, the shadowy parts are not pitch black. You can see everything. You can see the details. I really like that. And I think because of that, you focus more on the actions and the feelings that these characters give you. And, like, she is not good at the end. And you question whether she ever was good. It's really interesting. If you don't have any more questions at this point, I'm going to move on to the lady part.
Okay.
Okay.
Please do.
So in the end, the way that we defeat the lady is as she's trying to attack us, we kind of angle her in a way where she has to look in the mirror to the point where after you do it an X amount of times, she kind of like loses her power. She shrieks at her reflection, right? And this is in the DLC, but as the player in the DLC, you see her take her mask off.
Yeah.
And she is deformed. It's really far away from the camera. It's like you're crawling through and like spying on her, right? As a child, like sneaking by. So it's hard to see, but you can tell that she is not in great shape.
What does that mean? Say more about that.
Almost hocus pocus style. Like she looks like she's withering. And it made me actually think of whether or not she needs the children to keep up her youth and beauty. But also she doesn't have youth and beauty. She is, let me see if I can get like a screenshot of it. So like it's a little blurry, but she looks like she's older.
Yeah.
And also
she looks like the other adults, like kind of melty.
Melty, skin, saggy.
Messed up.
And I mean, most of that image by her face is her hand, but you can still see that it looks like a mask.
Yeah.
And a lot of the mirrors in her room are smashed or hidden. There are a lot of portraits of very young women, and we're not sure if it's her throughout the years or if it's others like her. But basically, like, she no longer has that beauty about her. And I think a lot of her story is that she probably got corrupt by this power that Six is going to get from her, which we do see the bottom of Six's face. We see her chin, a little bit of her mouth, right? So it's safe to assume that if she uses that power, she's probably going to become one of them, right? And that's a scary thought. That she's gonna, like, the hero, the protagonist we've been traveling with is gonna end up being just as evil, just as bad. I think it's a very cool parallel. And the game does it with gameplay as well. Because there are a lot of times where Six is walking to a place through, like, I don't know, like, the vents or whatever. And we see others walking in the hallways we're avoiding in the same direction as Six, right? So in a lot of I actually just realized that as I said the previous sentence, but in a lot of games, when you're running away from things, you're not going towards where they're walking, right?
Right.
You're walking away from where they're going. So that kind of further solidifies that maybe she's not trying to escape at all. Maybe she is completely focused on getting to the lady, even though a lot of the moments in the game were like hiding from her when she passes by. But it's also almost like we're hunting her the same as she might be hunting us. Because a lot of the times that we see the lady, she's in the background as this horde of kind of portly, overweight monsters are walking towards the main buffet. And we see her through Six's point of view of looking over at the lady from hidden locations from the shadows. So it's really, really interesting. There's like a theme of the villain who's a woman who's like, I wouldn't say motherly, but she is in charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she lost her beauty, but she has all this power, but she's trying to chase that beauty back, and she can't. And now we have this child, this young girl, who's going after that powerful woman, who has her looks, who has her youth, but she's still trying to take that power. So they're both kind of looking for what the other has. And visually, we see Six constantly looking at the lady whenever we pass her. And we see the lady hiding away from looking at herself. It's really interesting once you, like, dig into it. It's really cool. I'm talking myself way more into this idea that I had. It's great. I'm really agreeing with myself here.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah. There is also a lot about, like, overindulging.
Yeah.
But once again, I think it has to do a little bit with maybe Japanese mythology and things like that. Because
why specifically from Japanese mythology,
just
I
that,
guess, would be my...
I mean, the scene is very similar to, in Spirited Away to Little Nightmares. There's actually quite a few scenes in Spirited Away that almost resemble it. I've watched Spirited Away after I played this game. So I've actually never seen it until I was... Maybe I watched it like a year ago. I was a full adult the first time I seen it. And while watching it, I just kept thinking back to this game because a lot of the scenes are very similar. So I think they just take like inspiration from it to show the horror And we could have made an entire episode about, like, consumption and people trying to look like something they're not, of being rotten from the inside. You know, like, we can do all of that. I think a lot of movies and games and shows have that at its core a lot of times. Like, a lot of the villains that we encounter in anything, really, is about the corruption of personhood, the loss of humanity. And this game has visually kind of... I lost my thought. And this game very visually shows us that loss of humanity. Because literally the skin is sloughing off of people. And they might not even be people at all. They might have stolen.
Yeah, I was going to say, are they humans? Are they monsters? Or does it not matter? I guess at a certain point, they're monsters regardless.
So a lot of it is very circular because we don't get any answers. Once again, like, there's no writing in this game. There's nothing to read. There's nothing, nothing to, like, explore. It's very linear. You're in one room and then you walk into the next room and the next room and the perspective shifts, and it's really pretty and neat. But, like, overall, you're just following a story, and you can put a lot to it. But I think the things that at least we've talked about in this episode that I've, like, explored are just the things that most interested me.
Yeah.
But there's, especially when you bring the context of the second game into it, there's a lot to do with consumption and kind of, like, the modern society and our easy access to a lot of resources and what it means to like just have everything at our fingertips. You can go that route as well. It's really interesting.
Where does that come up? Because this is set on a ship. There's modern technology now. You haven't mentioned any modern technology.
In this game, no. In the second one, it has a lot to do with television, but that's different. In this one specifically, it's basically tourism, right? Because all these people kind of go on a cruise ship and there's unlimited buffets. And let me see if I can actually just show you a little, like,
You never mentioned the limited buffets before.
It's just everyone in this game eats. Because remember I mentioned, like, how the children are being eaten.
Yes.
And it's just, it's used as a tool of, like, why we're running away from these little guys. Well, big, huge guys. Is because they want to eat six. And it didn't, like, it didn't really match the theme of what I wanted to talk about. So I didn't kind of open that up in the conversation, but all of them, including the chef, are very big people, and a lot of them are eating.
You mentioned that, but it just
because there's like a whole other dimension to this game that I don't feel comfortable talking about unless I want to get into the second game, because I think it like ties in better. And for this episode, I wanted to kind of just focus on the themes that are not isolated to the first one, but isolated to six. So I kind of just like, I did leave out a lot of stuff about the game in terms of like, for example, like the eating or whatever. I only focused on six point of view because I still want you to kind of have like a couple of things to explore if you play the game. I want you to have a little mystery in there. Okay, I'm gonna show you like a screenshot of one of the levels. Okay. I just sent Chloe an image where Six is running in the background. There's like a table and there are a lot of those monsters sitting at it, and they're all kind of like eating these piled up plates of fish and guts and all that stuff, and meat. Most importantly, there's a lot of meat. And one of them is basically crawling after her because of how fat this creature is. And he's like unable to stand up or unwilling to. And if you just watch like a video or two, you'll see that it's they're just like scrambling after her in a very like creepy, scary way. It's like no care about anything or what's in their way. They're just trying to get that thing that's trying to escape. Almost like a dog chasing a cat chasing a rat, you know?
Yeah.
Which brings it kind of back to Six eating the rat earlier in the game. And she's kind of like the rat in this situation. There's a lot of little things like that. But a lot of the latter part of the game is her trying to escape from these people who are overindulging. But I don't know enough about like Japanese mythology or even if it's from the mythology. I'm just assuming because Spirited Away is so heavily infused with it. And that's like where I first realized that it's a, if not common, at least a theme of sorts. So actually, I would be very interested in researching that a little more. Because now I'm kind of curious about it. But
yeah,
there are just parts of the game that it would be easier for me to talk about those themes if I had the second game as something to pull from. But it's like a whole other thing. It'll make me jump into a different audio essay, to a different little monologue and argument. And that's the game. Okay. And that's why I like it.
That's the game. That's the little nightmare. Okay. One final question, mm-hmm. which is, how did you find out? How did you get into it in the first place?
I don't remember. Okay. I think either a friend mentioned that they tried it and it was fun.
Okay.
Or maybe I've seen my cousin play it for like a minute as I was passing by. Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, I remember now. I think it was either my aunt's or my cousin's birthday. And while I was like, while we were setting the table, he was playing the game. And I was just like, in passing, I saw it and I was like, that looks interesting. But I had no idea what it was about or anything like that. And then I picked it up and I played it and I really, really loved it. But yeah, I saw my cousin play it. The second game gets a little more into like an actual story with actual things happening. But the first one is almost purely told from environmental surroundings. It's really cool.
Okay, interesting. So, I don't know what else I have to say. I guess this reminds me a lot of Dark Souls, but taken to a, more of an extreme, where Dark Souls, a lot of the story is told through items that you find. Like, you know, there is dialogue, but it's very minimal. Mm-hmm. And so it's reminding me a lot of that. In that, like, a lot of the, you just have to put things together using context clues.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
After listening to me talk about this game, would you give it a go? Would you actually want to, like, maybe play it?
I mean, I do. I started it, and I just need to be in that right mood for that kind of game. But, like, yeah. I mean, I didn't realize it was that dark. I guess when you recommended it to me, I assumed it was, like, here is what I assumed this game to be when you recommended it to me for the first time, and I didn't know that much about it. What I thought it would be is that, like, and again, this is me just totally making up just based on kind of the name and what I kind of knew about. What I assumed it would be is that, like, each stage in the game is a different kind of common horror story nightmare that people have pretty often, and, like, maybe the first stage is like, I don't know, like, you're scared of the ocean, and that, and then the next stage is like, so it's like, what is it called, thalassophobia, and then the second stage is about fear of, like, I don't know, darkness, and so it's like a light and dark puzzle, like, so, like, and that there wasn't really a connected story, you were just this little raincoat girl, and it, I don't know, just going from stage to stage. I didn't realize there'd be this deep a lore and a backstory and, you know, thematic through lines to talk about.
It's really interesting because, once again, if you didn't care about that, like, if you didn't care about looking at the environment and putting certain things together, you could still get a lot from this game, but you can just finish it and enjoy it and not get all of this out of it. Like, it's very easy not to. But also, if you want to, you can get way more out of it than I mentioned. Which kind of leads me to the final open-ended thing, but I also want to kind of hear your comment on it as well. From what I've said so far, does it change the context of the name of the game for you?
Ooh, okay. The context of the name of the game for, I mean, obviously it's changed how I perceive the game, but has it changed how I perceive the name of the game? I don't know, because
I think you don't have enough context, but just like,
I don't have enough context for it.
But as I played it more and more, I was like, oh, maybe we're the little nightmare. Maybe we're watching the little nightmare grow into a big nightmare. And it can be either way. It can be whatever you want, honestly. I'm sure there are more correct assumptions than others, but nothing is concrete in this game. And I don't think I think she's definitely a little nightmare in the making.
Yeah.
But I think overall, I still agree with the view of the name in context through six. Like, it's her nightmare more so than she's the nightmare. But it's, once again, by the end of the game, it is so muddled. It is so unclear about what her intentions are that it's really cool to be like, now here is where she's the title. And I just thought it was really interesting that they kept it till the very end and they set it up in a really neat way. And they did correct atmospherical settings and everything.
Atmospherical.
I don't speak
Atmospheric.
English. Jeez. No, it's also circular, round, right? It's a sphere. No. I said it wrong, but I'm making the best out of it.
This is the true little nightmare for me.
Yeah, she has to listen to me butcher words all the time. Daily. But yeah, this game has a lot in it, and I enjoyed it. And I played it on a different Discord, and I had a couple of my friends like...
Wait. Mm. Say what that means, though. You didn't play it on Discord, you...
Streamed it. I streamed it on my other friend's Discord, and a couple of people were just like actually very regularly with me while I played. Nice. And they watched me play this, and we all kind of experienced the story together. It was cool. It was creepy and unsettling and really fun. And she's still very cute. Six doesn't get less cute throughout the game.
Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap up.
Wow, that was an hour. My throat is so dry.
You talked a lot. So let me wrap us up here. I just want to mention our social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is @inmedialez. Our subreddit is r/inmedialez. Our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com.
You can email us at inmedialez@gmail.com, and our website is inmedialez.com. If you want to join our Discord server, the link is in the...
description.
That's the word I'm looking for.
I thought you wanted me to finish your sentence. I was like, oh, this is a new thing.
Yeah. And Val?
Before I do my little sign-off phrase, I also want to mention that we're approaching the 100th episode, and I think it's going to be a real treat, so just keep an eye out for that.
Hopefully,
yeah. And we'll see you in the next one.
And may I say, little nightmares before Christmas.
My God.
I've been holding on to that for like the whole time. I'm like, I need to work this in somewhere. I'm just doing it right at the end.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Also, it helps us grow, and we appreciate every single one of you who follows. And if you like us, tell a friend. Just be like, hey, these two lesbians are talking about other lesbians, gays, non-binary folk, and really queer people. Once again, thanks for listening, and we really appreciate you.